Joining us on the line now is Rob Cowan. He's a co-author of Skimming Stones and Other Ways of Being in the Wild. It's a book of simple skills that can help us to interact with nature, achieve a deeper connection with it, and even step inside another dimension. Welcome to the show, Rob.
Hi, thank you very much.
Thanks so much for being with us. So why did you guys decide to write this book?
I think it was because we both met in the urban landscape, which was a very different experience to one we'd experienced as children. And we became clear that modern life now, which is just moving from computer screens to, you know, gadget-filled homes in air-conditioned cages, buses, trains, cars, etc. By living this kind of life, we become more and more disconnected with the landscape, with nature, the sort of terrains we evolved to exist in as human beings. So we wanted to address that, really, and try and give people a way of connecting back with the landscape, with nature, in a way that our forefathers did, and many of our grandparents did, but that's being lost now, really.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that less than a quarter of children visit a local patch of green weekly.
Yeah, it's quite scary, and there's a lot of research in the US about how much time children spend indoors in front of the 2D screen and how much of their education comes from that now. I don't think it's any coincidence that levels of obesity, of ADHD, of all these kind of attention disorders happen in children as a result of that. And our case is very much that it's the same in adults as well. The human animal evolved to exist in nature, and it has a very powerful effect on us when we spend time in nature, slow down and spend time in it. So really, it's about the benefits for everyone of being in nature, and really how you can simply go back and reconnect with the landscape in a more profound way.
Mm. I mean, in terms of kids going outside and letting your kids go out and play, more and more people in the UK are living in heavily populated areas, and I think, you know, to be fair, it can be a lot harder for parents to just allow their kids to go outside roaming about with, you know, all the levels of crime and things like that.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because on the one hand, we've always lived, you know, certain amounts of people have lived in heavily urbanized areas, and I think there was always a tendency to take children out to do things because there was less kind of entertainment at home, if you want to put it that way. And also, kids were given a freer rein to run wild. You know, I remember when I was 7 years old on the Yorkshire Moors, me and my brother were let out of the house in the summer, and we just went off for the day. We had rules that were things like don't leave each other. You know, as long as you're in a group, stay in a group. And if one person comes home, then everybody comes home. And I think today there is, you know, without trying to, you know, inflame the kind of health and safety debate, there is very much a tendency for people to worry about children being out. But, you know, there's this research in America about kind of crime against children, and it's actually a lot lower than we think it is. It's just the media makes us feel that it's a very, very common occurrence and everything else. But actually, the argument is, look, if you leave your kids inside all day and you don't establish connection to nature with them that they evolved to have, then actually you'll be doing them harm anyway, mentally and in other ways. They may develop all these conditions that shorten their life. So actually, it's got to be weighed up. You know, there needs to be time taken to spend time in the outdoors. We know that. Everybody knows it's good for us. Why else do people pay more for a room with a view if it's not good for you, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it's just weighing up that and making the time to go out, maybe with your children. I mean, this is the point in our book, is we wanted to give, because, you know, all that knowledge is being lost now. Friends of mine who are having children, they don't have these skills, and as a result, the children aren't going to have these skills. How can we expect children to grow up with a love of nature and of landscape and everything else if they have no way of connecting with it, you know?
There was another article recently I read saying how fewer children had ever climbed a tree or had ever built a den, things like that.
Things that
I did as a kid, definitely, all the time.
Absolutely, and it's everybody you speak to about this book, the reason it's got so much attention, I think, at the moment is because everybody you speak to about it can remember doing these things as a young person. And now the reality is that young people aren't doing these things, and it's a great shame because it definitely has an impact on how you value things as you grow older. I mean, every kid loves building a den, right? I mean, you can take them to see the greatest architectural wonders in the world, and they'll be bored by them. But show them a treehouse, and they'll go crazy. And that's because the building of a den speaks to all of us, innately, really. It's something that where we're on the fringe of society, but we've got our own space. It's exciting. It's adventurous. We're off in the woods, you know. And I would say it's still great to do it now, you know. I mean, Leo and I, when we were writing a book, we went out and camped in the woods, and sleeping in a den in the woods is a much different experience to sleeping in a tent. You know, it's like pulling the leaves up. It's like pulling up the ground like an eiderdown and crawling into it. And nature comes to you as a result. It's really interesting. You know, we woke up and there were deer around us because they hadn't seen the den as anything strange in the landscape like they would have done with a tent. So there's all these kind of incidental discoveries that come with these simple activities as well.
And building dams. I used to love doing that. That's great fun.
Mm. Building dams is great, and it's fantastic. Well, I did it as a kid, and you learn a lot from it. I mean, that's the point in the book as well, is that we try and look at why doing these activities has a sort of a profound impact on people. Building a dam, you learn all these different things. You learn about how water works, about pressure. You learn all these things. And you know, the objective with a dam is to build something. It's not necessarily to stop water, but it's to divert water down a small current. All dams have a current that runs water, that lets water out. So building a dam is really to build up a head of water that you can then play around in, which is great. You know, we built one in Wales, and it was a boiling hot day, which is unusual for Wales. I'm sure your Spanish listeners will agree with me there. But it actually was a hot day, and we eventually had this deep pool in the river, and we could just lie around in it. And as soon as we left it, all these creatures came into it. You know, there were minnows, and a simple bottle trap, which we talk about in the book as well. You know, you make it out of a plastic water bottle. We left that in the water. Within 10 minutes, it was being colonized by sticklebacks, you know. And just watching things like that and taking the time to slow down and be in nature is such a rewarding experience, honestly. It really refocuses you. And it's funny now, you know, it's strange that in things like screensavers and everything else, we have these tropical fish scenes. We have scenes like, you know, aquariums to make us calm down and relax. And something as simple as making a bottle trap or a dam does that as well. But it has all these other benefits, you know. So it's well worth doing.
Yeah. And the title of the book, Skimming Stones, is there a real art to skimming stones?
There is an art to skimming stones, believe it or not. And we started, I mean, it was the first activity we tried together, really. We went off to the Highlands and thought we'd give it a go because we were just wandering out as mates. And we got lost and ended up sleeping in the wilderness. And in order to kind of calm down and feel a connection, we both started instinctively skimming stones. And as we did, we, you know, scrabbled around on our knees, and we sort of inadvertently get closer to the landscape. And the art really is just to tilt that stone up about 20 degrees, so when it hits the water, it's not hitting it and disappearing in, it's hitting it about 20 degrees, times that with velocity, so that when you're really throwing it, you've got a good throw behind you, and you should get maximum skips.
In my experience, men tend to be better at this than women.
Not always true. I think men take it more seriously as most sports. That's the problem. And as a result, they tend to look more serious. But we've done it with friends on the beach before where we've had all the girls around saying, I'm not doing that, I can't be bothered. And then actually they're the ones you can't stop doing it, because like all of these, I mean, we call them in the book, we call them ritual things in the same way that any ritual to the outsider seems illogical. You know, it seems crazy. But you know, skimming stones really, it's an inconsequential goal. There's nothing matters whether you're skimming well or not, but actually when you're doing it, there's nothing more exciting. You can't stop doing it, and you always want to get more skips.
Yeah.
So I would just, whatever your sex, whatever your age, go out and skim stones. There's a reason why every race in the world skims stones, you know. Bedouins do it on the sand. Inuit skim stones on the ice. You know, it's such a beautiful, addictive pleasure that costs nothing. That, you know, it's a shame. It's such a shame people don't do it as much as they used to.
Yeah, no, I agree. And something that I used to do as a kid that I loved was poo sticks.
Oh, we had the biggest poo sticks challenge when we were building the dam. I mean, that's the other great thing about building the dam is that, you know, it can be the end point, the finish line for your poo sticks, which you play further upstream. And Leo and I had a real battle there because, you know, as you know, it's from Winnie the Pooh. And we were both fans of Winnie the Pooh as a kid, so we decided to hold this thing. And we found two sticks, one shaped like an R and one shaped like an L, and we dropped them in, and the challenge was on. But it's great fun, you know. You sort of, it's funny how playing games like that in a river, you know, just dropping sticks into a river can imbue them with life. You suddenly, you know, you imagine yourself as the stick as it hurtles around a tree root or down through a rapid, and you become really excited about it. But that, you know, playing that as a kid like you did is an important process because it helps you to, you know, become more creative in your outlook. You imagine yourself as the stick. You imagine what it feels like. There's all these processes that happen when we play in the outside, and we can't underestimate them, and we can't let them disappear.
And what used to get me is when one of the sticks wouldn't turn out the other side, and you know, because sometimes they'd get caught on something. If it was a particularly big bridge, then, you know, you'd be waiting to see where and when they're both going to come out, and sometimes neither of them would come out, and then that would be
a disaster. That's it. Well, you see, this is it. I mean, this is what happened to Leo's stick. The L got stuck in some tree roots in this little turn. Yeah, so only R ever made it to the end, but the L got stuck. But we looked at it philosophically and said, well, you know what, maybe it's the start of a new natural dam there. Maybe it's the first stick in another dam. So we just let it go. But he wanted a rematch, but I was going to just take the championship and walk away.
best of three.
Exactly. And that's the whole point of all these games, you know. Whether it's skimming stones or making dens or, you know, flying kites, you just can't stop doing it. You know, once you've learned how to build a kite out of bin bags and bamboo, flying it on a beach, doesn't matter if you're in Spain or you're in Scotland, it's just the most exciting stuff. And it's crazy because you can have people with big, expensive shop-bought kites right next to you, but all the kids on that beach and all the dads and all the mums, they just want to see the homemade. It's the joy of the DIY kite. If you can make something fly, they all want to see that, you know. So it's a great experience. It's a great time to spend in the outside.
And it's fun. I mean, I've talked about this with various people on the radio before, but it's all these little games that cost nothing, and as you said, things that you can make yourself, that adults are likely to remember about their childhood. You know, we're talking about it, and you were talking about it with Leo, obviously, about, you know, what fun it was, and you're not talking about the amazing computer games that cost lots of money, and you know, people don't talk about expensive things so much. You know, you look back on the fun memories of silly little games.
That's it. That's the beauty of it as well. And I think the important thing about doing it now, whether you're an adult or a child, is that, you know, there's the actual serious point here is that we have all of us humans have this innate sense of yearning to be in the landscape. You know, it's natural because we evolved to be in it. You know, we didn't evolve to live in cities. We evolved to live in the woods and the trees and the fells and the mountains. That's what we evolved to live in. So doing these activities, being outside, actually is a transformative experience too. It's not just that the game, that the fun aspect is so much a part of our childhood and our memories, but it's the fact that it's establishing a sense of belonging, I think, in the natural landscape, which we all yearn for. I mean, it has this powerful effect. And you can see people trying to get the same effect in different ways in their urban existence, you know, whether it's hanging landscapes on their walls or keeping flowers in their house or going to do yoga and meditative aspects like that, because they're all things that we get from nature, you know. Let's not forget that all art, all religion, everything came from nature and us trying to understand our place in the great world. So really what we're talking about is just whether you're a kid or an adult, going back to the source, going back to nature in its rawest form, and you get all these things. If you just sit in a wood and build a den and listen to the birdsong, it has a profound effect on you. You get this feeling of euphoria. And that's what we want to get across to people. And with the book, Skimming Stones, all we're really doing is giving the techniques to doing these things. So people can buy the book, they can read about how to do it, and then they can read about why it's good for them to do it, and they can go out and have their own adventures.
Love it. Well, if people want to get a copy of the book, it's called Skimming Stones and Other Ways of Being in the Wild. And if people want to find out a little bit more about you and your co-author, Leo, they can have a look on the website, robinleo.com. Rob, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. And hello to everyone in Spain.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Yeah, all the best. Bye-bye.